Doug's hanging around in the background. He's attending another meeting and he's listening in.
That's hardcore.
Did he say which meeting was more interesting?
No, he didn't. Yeah. And we don't really know what the other meeting is, really.
So. That's pretty funny. Well, I started reading through the manuscripts that you guys, that were posted. Sounds like this Gebsner conference was really cool. Like, really cool.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's up online if you look up the, did we put up the link?
You did put up the link. I didn't have a chance to get to it.
Yeah.
There's a link to the live streams. I'm not sure that watching them, I know that watching them would not be the same as being there. I think that the whole being in person and seeing Jeffrey in person for the first time and being with Jeff.
I did that years ago.
So. You've just gotten used to it, the specialness.
Yeah.
But it was really wonderful. I mean, I'd say the conference was a convergence point, but there were things happening around it that really made it like special in that way. Like the last evening, Jeffrey came out to the town where I live, Longmont, and we went out to dinner, and my wife and my two daughters came along, and that was a wonderful time. I was so happy that we could do that.
It was great.
Yeah, so there was just like a string of events, I think, like that, and they all kind of build on each other. And then the next day, or I have to reconstruct the chronology in my mind, but I went out with these sunglasses on and I had this idea, and it turned into this fantasy that I'm struggling to really, I don't know, like bring down into literary form, because that's one of the challenges here, is that on the one hand, I am very serious about this idea. I actually want to take it to as far as I can go with it. Like there's something just aesthetic about doing something like that for me at this point. And moreover, there's a part of me that thinks it's actually a good idea. and so I do, you know, see the possibility that it would act, you know, would happen. I mean, sillier things have taken off, you know? And then, in addition to that, it's an anthology and it's a literary publication and it has a certain call that it's put out. And so I'm responding to that call. And there's also the relationship in the field with Heather and Jeffrey and everything connected to the conference and the way that events unfolded that feels like this actually comes from the field. It's actually come, like I didn't make it up, you know? I'm struggling a little bit. I oscillate between excited and sort of giddy and
yeah, it shows through in the text.
Right. I'm really not happy with the text. I just want to say like that. I had to put something out because of our deadline. Normally I would never put that material out. Like I would develop it much further, but I tend to write slowly and I need a lot of space and time. And that's kind of not what I have right now, you know, with all these other things going on.
Yeah. I think it's important to write around an idea first. I guess what I mean is to not let your first drafts get too polished, because then you get too attached to them and you're not able to then throw them out and pull them to pieces and put them back together. So like there's for me, sometimes when I write, there's an element of keeping it rough until it's close enough to its final form. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the problem is deadlines.
Oh, okay. What's your time frame on this?
Well, that's the thing. The
deadline is the 31st in principle.
Oh.
We can probably push it, but, you know, that's a negotiation issue, right? So,
and that's also part of the, that's one of the elements in the whole dance, is that there's a timely aspect to it, that it should happen relatively quickly. It shouldn't drag on. There's something about the mutational quality. It's like dynamic, I think. And on the other hand, I don't personally do very well with deadlines. And I much prefer to have indefinite time to develop an idea. And when I do, I'll spend months and years on creative ideas, and I'll just kind of nurture them really slowly. And it's a bit, you know, of an ebb and flow, and life has to happen. Like, I actually have to find the answers to my questions in events and in relationships and in conversations. And that's, I think, how they prefer to be birthed.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's just this, you know, like there's this play that we're in the midst of. And so, you know, when you're on stage, right? Like, there's a certain element of that. Like, we've signed up. Right. And that was part of the conference as well, is the, you know, the performative aspect of it and the presentation we did together.
Here's Heather.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Heather.
We were chatting about our crazy project here, so.
Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Mary. I think.
I might have missed what you just said. Sorry.
Sorry, I'm Mary. Nice to meet you. I think
nice to meet you, Mary.
Maybe haven't met yet.
Yeah. So. Nice to meet you.
Hey, I read your poem.
Okay. Thanks.
When it was posted.
Oh, cool.
So.
Well, I don't know if Johnny is going to join us or not.
He didn't say he wasn't, and he usually does when he does come, so maybe it'll be just a little late, and like summer, he probably got lost in time a bit, so it happens to all of us, right? So I managed to loop I had a class to teach yesterday online, completely forgot it. I got a message from the students at 9:30, it was from 6 to 9. Got a message from the students at 9:30 saying, "Hey, what happened about the class?"
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
These things happen.
Yeah, and then next week is reading break, so there's no class next week. They reminded me of that, so.
Yeah, we showed up for that one, but not this one.
You're literally becoming the absent-minded professor.
Well, it does happen. It's not the first, the last. In fact, I forgot. I was signed up to go to the opera just before I went out to Boulder, and I completely forgot about it. And so I got the call from my friends who were standing outside the opera house, you know, the cinema, saying, "It's starting in 5 minutes. Are you coming?" No. That was when I was working on the grant, Mary. And I was
completely just falling in all directions. It was just. That's over, though. Yay.
That's over. So I have no excuse for forgetting the class, really. I feel terrible about it, but. I got an article written, so.
there are benefits.
There are, yeah.
Well, it's cool that you can laugh about it. I still have time anxiety, and that's the other pole on which I oscillate is with deadlines and this feeling of precarity around things and kind of keeping, you know, this moving structure, like, of my existence, that is to say, afloat. And I enjoy it for the most part, but it does feel that that their pressure is exerting themselves, and they come from different directions. Like, they come from the subliminal and the kind of unconscious, but they also come from, I think, the involute, like, the higher, you know, the what Aurobindo talks about is the involutionary, like the psychic and subtle sort of dimensions, and they kind of converge, you know, in our being. And I think that part of like writing is working those out. It's almost like establishing a conversation. I'm finding it these few months have been pretty difficult as far as writing. I don't feel like I've been able to really like expand on things and complete things. I feel like I've tried to do things and I've gotten some way, but there's some sort of tensegrity or some tension that prevents them from really, they almost become these, like these eggs or these shells that want to expand, but are contained by some encasing or something like that. But I don't mean to go, I wonder if we should start with some in talking about this group, because Mary is new and we're in flux, and I would love to just check in and kind of talk about things more generally before we go into our writing and the specific pieces that we shared tonight. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
I don't have anything prepared to say or anything. I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that we've been doing this group now for, you know, 3/4 of a year or so. We're almost, I think, towards 1 year of meeting monthly, and I think we've done it every month. And this started as an initiative that Zachary Federer sort of, you know, it was sort of in the air. I think it was in the field. But he stated an intention to concretize it, to make it happen. And we did a number of meetings with him, and he's drifted into other things. He checks in on the forum sometimes and says he'll be back, but he was working on a piece. We've reviewed John's work, a piece that he's been working on called Maricon. And we've reviewed Heather's poetry, and more than poetry, it's poetry theory blend, and excerpts from Jeffrey's science fiction braided trilogy. And I've shared poetry that I'm working on, a piece that called I Am the Singularity, which I've been working on for some time, and is one of these difficult to manifest pieces. And who else has been here? Doug, of course, has presented himself as a non-writer, as a witness to our process and to our discussions, at least at first. And I know that that's not necessarily, a writer is not necessarily an identity that, at least that, you know, that he's kind of claimed or attached to himself. But nonetheless, he's a participant, and so we've
he does write.
And he does write.
He writes rather interesting stuff too.
So. Right. So if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck. And there's been something I think special about having this. You know, we've talked about a field. This is, are there underground fields? Do fields need to happen in overground space, or can fields be anywhere?
Well, they could be aquifers, I guess, if they were underground. So they would be like water fields, right? So.
We have multiple metaphors. And part, I think, of the idea is that it's sort of another metaphor. It's kind of like a garden, and different kinds of things are growing, and there's a certain ecology and a certain symbiosis, but there's also, I think, room to grow and to bring in new flora and fauna and microorganisms and so forth. And Jeffrey invited Mary, and others have kind of, I don't know, we haven't really worked out a system is the thing. I've proposed some ideas, but we don't really have a system. And maybe that's been okay, actually. I think it's working out just fine. But part of the pressure that I feel sometimes is the sense that there are others out there, and that part of what we're doing is sort of an attractor, even though it's, we're not advertising it or anything like that, although we sort of are, but I'm not like on Twitter tweeting about this every day, you know, like that's not been my modus operandi. Nonetheless, I feel that part of what we're cultivating in this space, Writers Underground and Metapsychosis and Infinite Conversations and Cosmos, is, for lack of a better word, although this word is just fine, actually, an authentic space, like a space for actual, where the actual matter of creativity and writing, and not just those as aesthetic activities, but as communal and human and divine activities, at least in, you know, one could frame it that way, where those are the center, where those are prioritized, you know, over more superficial or more commercial concerns, although the superficial and the commercial and, you know, those dimensions are also in play or also, you know, part of the equation. So I'm mostly concerned with preserving the quality and the depth and the sincerity of the space and of promoting our processes, because I feel like we're on, they're not just processes, they're really paths, and they're movements, you know, in our being that are intermingling and that have something to do with each other, like even more so as we have these kinds of conversations. But then really, I feel are going somewhere. Like I feel that as a writer, we all have something to bring forth, and that's part of our work in this life, is to bring that forth. It's not the only thing. We have family and friends and other things and all these complexities and time, of course, and limitations thereof. But I would like this to be a space that's, it's kind of like a fellowship, and that we're helping each other on our paths, and they happen to have converged for some time here, and at some point they will diverge inevitably. But may, you know, may we be, I don't want to be overly sentimental, but may we be really touched by what is shared here, so that it adds to our souls and enriches our own creative expression and our own communion with the world through our work. So again, didn't want to get too deep or sentimental. I just want to say this is special. I'm very grateful and happy that you're here, Mary, and all of us. And I would just open up the space to any conversation that wants to emerge. And, you know, we have our pieces that we shared, but we don't have to directly talk about them. You know, we could talk around them. We could go in any number of directions.
Is that a pre-Halloween sucker thing, Heather?
It's a tide me over sucker. Very flavorful.
I'd like to ask, since I'm a newcomer, the works that I read, and they were amazing. They were pretty mind-blowing, but was up on what you guys put on the forum. They were poetry. Would all of you, I know, I already know, Jeffrey, that you work in several different genres, but Marco and Heather, I'm just curious about what your writing practice usually is, or where it's going, kind of thing.
Marco is quiet, so I don't know if that's my invitation to speak. Yeah. So I'm in the process of, well, kind of figuring that out. I do have multiple projects that I want to do as well. If I go in the novel direction, I've started a novel. It has a poetic emphasis to it. I came from Naropa's MFA program, and they called everything there poetics. I don't know if you know Naropa, but
no, it's
okay. It's a Buddhist affiliated institution in Boulder, Colorado, started by a teacher named Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche and Allen Ginsberg and Ann Waldman. So it's a beat poet oriented school. And it's the creative writing program is called the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics, which is all very romantic and fun. And it's very much alive there. I would say there's a real transmission that comes down from the teachers, especially the ones who've been there. But they call everything their poetics, and they include prose in that, and they include novel writing. So I guess poetics could be a way of looking. And in that case, I would say that I do strive to be a full-time poet who's responsible for creatively shaping my own experience and my world, whether that be scholarship. Some of the methods I've learned in the MFA program, I've used in writing scholarship, because I don't want to do ordinary scholarship anymore. And I do consider myself a poetic writer. So I'm inspired by like Gaston Bachelard and Ann Carson, who does I don't know if you know her work, but she's a scholar / poet. I really love her blend, the way she, and it also comes out, I think, in her hybrid forms, which is also something I'm interested in. When I get to teach poetry now because I have an MFA, it just happened to work out at my school that they needed some teachers, and I'll be teaching an intermediate class, and I've got some topic classes proposed. So that's keeping that alive and really vital for me because I get to share it with students. So that's a lot of fun. And I'm interested in teaching a documentary poetics class and doing a project with that, and then also memoir, anti-memoir. So that and just kind of a, like Marco said, a poetry theory blend. That's what I'm interested in. And other things too, but I'll stop there. I do want to hear what you like to write too, before we end this.
I'm working, my big project right now is a novel. It's a historical novel. I've done a little bit of graphic narrative, with comic scenes and things like that. And I do a bit of theater too, like writing that will someday be put on in a theater. That's a work in progress. So I'm very, I like any narrative form. I mean, I love to read lyric forms, but all of my own writing is really strongly narrative. So just any kind of storytelling fascinates me, and when I see it, I want to try it. So,
although Ophidor is a poem.
So Jeffrey helped me once with a narrative poem, which is almost the only time that I write what I guess is like classically verse. I wrote a long narrative poem. It was a really good experience. I felt like it, it's so easy with storytelling. You have a story to tell and you want to tell it. Like the idea that you're... your writing should be transparent, that sort of, that nobody notices it's writing when you tell a story, and is a pernicious idea. And so writing a narrative poem just, I feel like it was flexing all these muscles that you are told not to use when you're doing straight narrative. So that was pretty good. I might do another one of those someday.
So I read I read aloud. So Marco and Heather organized a poetry night in relation to the Gebser meeting, but yes, as a separate event. Mm-hmm. And I read the epic poem that I had written at the beginning of one of my novels, but I read it because I was thinking about Ulfitter and what you did with that, Mary, and I thought, wow, if you can do that, maybe I could read this. So the first time I read it out loud.
I think it's so important to remember that poetry came first, right? Like novels and short stories were only invented a couple hundred years ago. But people have been writing epic poems as long as they've been alive, as long as there's been humans. It's actually a more natural form. When you do it, you feel like you're doing something artificial, but you're actually doing something more natural for the human mind. So
yeah, I was going to say that, Jeffrey, you read that piece, and I've written a short version of something like that. And it's weird because you end up going back to like these primordial poems, like, you know, the Iliad, the Mahabharata, whatever it is. Like, but in this case, the first poem in the book that I'm currently working on, quote unquote working on, begins rage, spears of rage, and it invokes that, you know, that opening of the Iliad, Achilles' rage. It's called The War of Art, and that's also the name of a writing book that's pretty good by Stephen Pressfield, called The War of Art. And in answer to your question, Mary, I definitely identify as a poet, but identify as kind of not the right word, because most of the time I feel like I'm failing. So it's not even an aspiration, because it's equally a curse. And it is also the kind of thing that the identity is not what's satisfying, or rather, like, to the extent that one identifies with the identity, one tastes dissatisfaction, but the actual accomplishment of a line, of a rhyme, of a thought, eloquently expressed, of song, and like the way that a poem, even in a narrative sense, can carry a tune and can carry like the passion, right? Like, that's, I think, part of what it is. And I think it's a vocation as well. I think that there's a role for the poet in the human ecology, and that however it happened that I am doing this, like, and that, you know, like Heather, I want to be a full-time poet. That's, you know, like, if I had a business card, I would put that on it. And but what that really means, like, is there's no path exactly for a poet. I'm not going to pronounce your name correctly, Wisława Szymborska.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her Nobel, I have a book of her collected poems, and she won the Nobel Prize, and she gave a talk, and like, there's really no degree in it. I mean, there is, of course, the School of Disembodied Poetics, and there's places where you can really focus on it, and that's like one of the beauty of a place, you know, and a program like that. And but like, the degree doesn't make you a poet. Like, it's more of the, I don't know, the effort, I suppose, or the I don't know exactly what it is. Everybody's kind of like, you know, can be a poet too, you know. That's the thing, is like, part of what, when poetry touches you, is that it opens up a kind of perception and opens up sort of channels of feeling and of intuition and of and story too, like the grounding in a story. Like, that's what poetry helps to do. And so part of what I feel like my work and mission, vocation, this life is to play that role for this time, like for this time of, you know, human existence or whatever. I'm failing miserably, but that's what I feel called to do, is to like Gebser, you know, had put it, to make some kind of statement with regard to the present. And of course that is eternal as well. Like that it's time, it all goes beyond time because it can do that. And I do also write other kinds of, you know, I do have a novel that I'm slowly gestating and that I know will take, like I have to be in another phase of my life. I just know it's there. I know it's waiting for me. And I started it and I read a little passage from it actually at that same reading. I don't know how to write novels. I don't know how to write stories. It wasn't part of my education, honestly. Like it was something that I picked up later. And so it's almost like a second language to me and I struggle a lot with it. I don't feel natural at all. But that's part of what makes it really exciting when something happens that that breaks through that feeling. And you know, those, the poems that, you know, they are the, like my navigation points in my life. That's how I make sense of my life is ultimately is this poetic, this poetics. At least like when I'm open to that, because a lot of times it's like, there's a closure. And part of what I really like about Heather's work, just by the way, is that she, I think, has a way of writing from like those in between spaces that like I still struggle to get like to the other side or get to like the and I think I just, the way that she kind of weaves her experience even in indeterminacy, I think like that's something I'm learning from her. And I think that there's all, well, I can go on, but yes, thank you for that inquiry.
And if I might say, because, you know, my practice has been novel writing for the last 7 years, and I feel like the poet is struggling to reemerge from within the novelist. And it's partly because of Marco and Heather that's happening. I remember when Heather, when we first met online, through the group before we even got into the quantum poetics, I remember you brought in this sensitivity about poetry, and the group as a group we had been more focused on prose, even though Marco writes poetry. As a group we'd been more focused on prose, and when Heather came in she brought with her this much greater sensitivity around poetry, and it woke something up inside me, you know, that had been dormant for a long time. And so I really feel blessed to be surrounded by people like that, because it's allowed something to come into being that's been asleep for a long time. And so that's partly, so the poetry and so it's gotten to the point where I know I write novels, but for this piece, I wanted more to write poetry than I wanted to talk about it. And I did end up talking about it a bit because I was encouraged to do so, but I don't have Heather's mastery of sliding between the one and the other the way she does, so... It flip-flops back and forth between the sort of scholar and the poet, but it doesn't have this intermediate level that I find so fascinating in Heather's work. So maybe it'll rub off eventually.
I'm getting so many, you know, nice comments here. I'm swelling. But I would just say, I like the word mastery there, but I would say it's more inquiry. I definitely haven't figured it out. And I'm surprised to hear what Marco said about the in-between spaces too. I'll have to think about that feedback as well. Just to kind of complete the circle here, I would just say also that the feedback I've gotten in this group has really sensitized me to writing in a way that my MFA program didn't. I feel that my writing is a practice and that's supported here. So multidimensional support for my writing. And then Marco's sensitivity to the right word has helped me with some of my careless spots. So I'm more attuned to that than I was previously, although I haven't dialed it in yet. It's just, that's been a kind of a lifelong battle for me. When I was a freshman in college, I took a philosophy class and I wrote a paper called Words as a Pyrrhic Victory, because I felt I could never get the right word. And it defeated me so much at the time that I didn't even try to write other than for classes. I did take some creative writing classes, but it just felt like such a struggle. So I guess I'm in a better place now than I used to be with it, but there's still definitely a carelessness in my being that this practice is also about attuning or, I don't know. That's all I have to say.
Well, I think it's worth noting that there are different schools of poetics, and the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics is a school of poetics. Like, there's certain defining voices to it and a certain style that, or patterns in that are distinctive, I think. And that's not to say that all the poets going through there, you know, write that way, because I think Heather actually writes quite differently than like that beat style that really has a home there, that's sort of its home. If you listen to Anne Waldman, for example, like you'll hear Allen Ginsberg in her. And of course, Allen Ginsberg is, you know, he's recapitulating the patterns of Whitman and Blake and others, but there's a distinctive way that the strophes and the breath is used and the way that kind of images are poured out. And it's distinct than from, say, the New York school or the San Francisco writer. And I don't even know what the schools are like now, because these are still coming out of the 60s. And I don't know that. I mean, I've read a piece called MFA versus New York or something like that, and like those being the literary cultures. And I don't care about any of that. I just know like what I have to do, and I think that the beats and like they were very catalytic for me, and I was attracted to Naropa, and I was here in the summer when Allen Ginsberg was here, I wasn't in the program, but it was like that. He was teaching Shakespeare and doing poetry readings, and like that was a real cultural moment, and there's a mythos there. And I think that like part of like I'm just riffing a little bit here, but part of what is difficult and part of what at least I feel I have to do is like break with mythos, but at the same time create your own mythos. Like, and maybe that happens in very like small, you know, minor gestures and subtle ways. I feel that's what Heather does. I think Jeffrey, in your poetry, I get more of the story. You know, I get more of something, and I think maybe that's how you as a fiction writer, novel writer, influences you as the poet. And I read something of yours, Mary. It was a few months ago, however, and so I don't. I didn't read it carefully. I just want to say, because it was kind of one of the tabs open, you know, like when I don't somehow. I mean, perhaps you had participated in one of the groups, and so I just went to your website and opened it up. But I didn't really sit with it, you know, like I would. But I got the sense more that you're telling a story, and you're just telling the relationships between people and the sort of intimacies of like life. And I got the sense of your sensitivity to that. And I feel like that's more where my heart wants to go. Like when I write my novel and when I actually kind of almost have time for that, it's terrible to say, but that's where I'd rather like settle than in the energy flows of like the beats and that kind of thing, like the cosmic like energy. That's I like that too, but I think I'd rather settle in in the domestic and the like the relational. So anyway, that's just some riffing.
This is interesting. This is all interesting to me because I don't think I ever read the Beat Poets in any systematic way. So I wonder, like, is there, do you feel like it's something that kind of excludes the personal or the personal? That's not quite the right word, but like there would never be a fusion?
The beats exaggerate. There's a technique of exaggeration, and I think inflation and of, you know, like an ecstatic tradition. Like I think it's in Rumi too, in a playful way, but it's not quite the same as like Ann Carson, like Jonathan Franzen. Like there's more of a realist, I think, tradition, which is just taking the human as the human and is exploring the intimacies of the human heart, I think. Like it felt more like that's where you were in. And Len Heather did that too, but in a different way, because I'm struggling to clarify what I'm saying, but
I agree with the Beat Poets. It's hard to get to the sense of the artist as a person. You see the artist as a performer, but you don't quite get a glimpse of the person, the actual, in their vulnerability, in their, you know, it's more of a putting out there, I find. I don't know. Maybe I'm just speaking from some, I haven't read much of it. I've read some of it. I've certainly read Kerouac, but.
I think the inherited tradition at Naropa now from the Beats. So they would, Allen Ginsberg would have said his heir was Bob Dylan and that there hasn't been really a poet who's been an heir of his, according to one of the teachers at Naropa. So I'd say probably the tradition now is experimental and avant-garde. And Anne actually started, what was it, the second New York School? So there was like the revival of the New York School. She's part of that. So she's both Naropa and the New York scene. So with the experimental writers, what I like is that experiment is a thing. It's a device. It's almost like a machine. There's an input and an output with writing. And that liberates some weird kind of intelligence, like kind of like a universal intelligence that operates through the poem. I don't have anything really intelligent to say about it. Other than that, I feel like I'm kind of close to it, that it's something I can't describe. Marco's doing an excellent job, but I'm sure there are people who identify as Beats. There were certainly a lot of people influenced by Beats there, but then they quickly get that out of us and get us in touch with an experimental avant-garde so that we can be in conversation, I think, with the writing world. The only part of Naropa that really converses with the outside world well, I think, is the writing program. So that's, I mean, the programs in terms of preparing the graduates to do work outside of the school. So
well, I just want to say that's interesting, the input output thing, and that's also, that's to me useful. I don't have enough tools in my toolbox, I feel like, that that's something I would like to learn more, because I just get stuck in my mind, and I think that part of like those tools or the experiments are to get you out of your mind, to get you into other minds that that free up the flow of language. I mean, sometimes I feel like that could be, maybe that can be artificial, like in the sense that, you know, words come, like you know, you could flip a coin and depending on how it lands, you know, assign a number to some kind of equation and then open up a book and pick a word, like according to how that equation pans out, and like put together a poem. but I don't know if it's all like it solves like a soul level question. And that's not to say that poetry has to just be about soul level things, but that's where I feel like it, you know, when I'm touched by a poem, sometimes it's fun or playful, or just mental or linguistic. But the ones that stay with me have more of that soul level quality. And so I think that that's in the beats. Heather knows much more about the experimental writing and that world than I do. And that's one of the things I glean and gather from what she shares. And she's a treasure trove of links to articles. She will give you a lot to read. Be careful.
I should put together the list of all the references. And then you can have the list, Mary.
Save me the time. Just do it now. Yeah. It's always contextual, though. It's my dharma. So I had something I wanted to say here. I have a friend from Naropa who did her thesis. I shared it with Jeffrey. It's probably on his list and hasn't quite gotten read yet. But she did her thesis on a quantum poetic type thing. It was actually not just quantum poetics. It was pretty profound. She's a very stylized, like, beautiful writer. Her energy is very deep. She's a bit cosmic for my taste. She also finds me a bit too reined in as a writer. We had a lot of good conversations about process, though. So the two of us kind of gravitated towards each other as like these Mysterions, to use a Portishead word, Mysterions that didn't quite fit in the program. We both had a little too much philosophical depth and theoretical interest, I think, to be fully understood by a lot of the others, yet we didn't quite understand each other. So she would be fun, I think, to invite as a guest to one of our, maybe even a cafe or something, to talk about process in experimental and, because she did a whole semester long project researching process for the experimental writers. So Marco, if that's something you want to learn more about, I'll see if Danny's willing to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd love to. That sounds great.
Yeah, this sounds interesting.
I mean, that's part of why I want to do this. Like why, when, you know, like they started the quantum poetics group and I wasn't involved in the Gebser conference, or I wasn't going to really contribute to this journal, but it was just to practice and play and try something different and get out of whatever loops that I was in. I would
be careful what you wish for, right?
Yeah. Right. I'm happy. I'm happier with where this is going. And, it was stressful leading into the conference. And don't know if I kind of handled it well, like from a writing perspective, because I thought I wanted to, my ambitions weren't lined up with the reality of what I could do. And that's, I think, part of, you know, what the deadline sort of forces you is to get real about what you can actually do. But again, like it also can force you beyond, you know, because the pressure can stimulate a kind of, you know, an idea or direction that you wouldn't have otherwise chosen if you were just kind of rambling along, taking your sweet time. I get this impression, Jeffrey, you're a lot more relaxed about time. I usually get the impression that Heather is on the edge, you know, she's somewhat harried. She's in between things. And not all, like that changes, not always hair. Sometimes you're harried because like there's a student outside your door or a paper that you haven't finished or whatever. And I don't know how I show up exactly. I know how I experience myself, and it has this dual quality where I can be very relaxed, I can be very still, but I can also be overtaken by time anxiety and that kind of can wreak havoc with my writing process if I'm not careful. Like I could just misinterpret the signals and not quite sort of use my, like, the precious time that I have to, you know, to write, I could misuse it. So that'd be, I'm just gonna put it out there, something I'd love to learn how to better handle.
I also think this mutations exercise for this anthology, so I may be off, I may be not sure that I'm in sync with everybody on this, but I don't think of it as a finished piece. I think of it as a work in progress. Like, I know it has, once it's out there, it'll be fixed in stone. And in that sense, it is a serious piece which is produced, you know, it is a product. But I do think that we are kind of struggling to give birth to this thing. And I don't think we're going to get it fully identified in time for next week. And so therefore, it has to be a kind of an unfinished piece. And I feel like we need to accept that. And so in a way, I'm saying, take a little bit of the pressure off, Marco, in terms of coming up with something that is gold. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be gold. It can be gold foil. Hey, you know, it has to have the rough shape of where are we going, but it doesn't have to be all
coming
solid.
For me, it will probably be fool's gold.
Well, that's fine too.
Well, I think if I could just encapsulate one kind of corner, you know, like illuminate one corner of this whole idea with the glasses and stuff, like, that would be fine, as long as it's well illuminated, as long as it works as whatever fragment it is. That's all I really need, I think. And so that was, you know, with the two different openings that I shared in the forum, like, I know I could do the second one. I'm glad you said you liked the first one, because that maybe has something, like, it has more complexity to it, perhaps, in a way. I don't know how much you can, you know, how much you can sense into it, but not just the displacement in time and the kind of psycho magic and stuff, but the...
Well, it's funny, because you said that you were struggling to make it more real with the second one, but I felt the voice in the first one was more you than the voice in the second one. The voice that I heard in the second one seemed to be no longer quite sure of what you were trying to do. Whereas the first one, it came and bang, this is what we're going to do, and this is where it's going, and it had such power to it.
It's really good to hear.
Yeah, I also resonate with that. There were several passages that I highlighted next to that I felt like I felt such interesting things happening, and the narrative quality was so strong, just the narrative voice. Like the story about being on the way to the Jaipur Literary Festival. I loved that passage. Purple cows and four-dimensional spreadsheets, soft, perfect curves, inner perception, ecstatic, varicolored cascades. I mean, like Jeffrey said, I couldn't put a finger on it, but maybe it's the confidence with which those lines tumbled out.
But, because they're from a future where it's assumed that this whole, that everything works out.
That may be a great writing experiment. Maybe we should all try that. Right from the future of the finished.
but I'm also trying to, there's also a dark element to it as well. And that, like, that's like the whole idea of the, you know, the CEO standing on stage, talking about his product, unveiling that, like, that to me is just ripe for mockery, and I want to hint at that and kind of own that shadow, you know, that idea of, you know, the entrepreneur with this grand idea that changes the world. I feel like there's some potential for dark humor there, and at the same time I'm a little scared, because I am serious. Like, I do want, like, I could totally see doing, like, making, manufacturing these sunglasses. And my mind has been spinning ideas, you know, of different lines of these glasses and, you know, ways that we can work with the materials, production, and how like fundraising, investment. Like, I'm really serious. Like, I want to create these sunglasses, and I want to, like, imbue them with this it's not a marketing campaign, because it's not like a buy the sunglasses. It's not about buying the sunglasses. It's more like hacking the way that behavior spreads, like, and that mythos spreads. Because if you actually got people wearing sunglasses and then they actually were talking to each other on the basis of the inquiries that those glasses were quote unquote magically holding, that would be so cool. Like, that would actually be interesting. You know, like, that would be an interesting story. Like, that would start to be generative beyond, you know, beyond my, you know, beyond this, the business idea. Like, it would actually connect people. And then if they were telling, they were having these interesting conversations, like sharing their dreams and stuff. Like, they, you know, like they're, like people are doing on the forum. I'm not participating in that. I'm just amazed that it's happening. Like, that were happening in real life. And then those people were then coming back to Infinite Conversations and, like, writing about it. And then that was sparking, like, I actually see this thing, like, cascading into these, you know, but it would take a total miracle for it to happen. Like, it would require people investing in it, and, like, but people who actually know how to produce products and sell them to get involved. And that's not me. I'm just dreaming it.
Maybe you don't have to do all that for this piece, but you used the second person. You were in a festive mood. You know, you're telling people how to feel. Again, it has that sense of power. Whereas your second deck says, oh, I think you should think about this. Ah, it doesn't have the same power.
Yeah, I had a sense of the first one had, I think this is my narrative background coming through, but there was a character in the first one and that wasn't in the second one. And as a human being, I connect with texts that show me human beings that I want to connect to. There was a moment where you said, you know, you pick the pink ones because they remind you of your girls. Suddenly there's this glimpse into a character's whole past. And that was part of what made the first one, for me, more compelling, the most compelling of the two. I did want to say something you said when you first mentioned this project. I was thinking about this, trying to articulate it, but I think you have a kind of innate conflict that you're going to run into, because if this is an idea that you believe in and you want to make concrete and stuff, I mean, the what you need to make that happen is optimism and hope and confidence. Like, that's how things become reality. If you're telling a story about it, stories always do have a dark side. So the qualities that you need to realize it as a concrete project are maybe not quite the same ones that you need to realize it as a literary project. I don't mean that that's an insurmountable obstacle. In fact, it might be an interesting conflict that makes what you're doing, I don't know, that might spark something really interesting going on. But I think you'll find there's a paradox somewhere in your thinking that you'll have to tackle, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's what the glasses are about. They're about holding paradox. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. And I think that this week it's a literary project.
Okay. And well, then embrace the dark side.
Yes, I do want to embrace the dark side. It'll be more fun to read if it has a dark side. But it would be really cool if it jumps out of the book. And
Like, I mean, the other thing is maybe the dark side isn't something that's intrinsic in the glasses. Maybe you can be optimistic that everything problematic about the glasses will be worked out. Maybe the darkness is the dark side is something that your glasses address. Maybe they are the solution to a problem that's important and matters.
They are both the problem and the solution.
And the problem, like most things, yeah.
I'm reading heavily into Schwartz Salant right now, so I'm about 60% of the way through the book now. And it's this argument that when we do creative things, that we necessarily create disorder. Mm-hmm. And so that you know, when you get those angst, as you get into this really exciting part of the creativity, and you get these huge doubts that come swarming in immediately afterwards. Well, that's what he's talking about, is the very act of creating these very exciting new things brings in a kind of tailspin all of the negativity and all of these other things, the disorder that comes out of it. And we need to be aware that the two go together. Otherwise, we get swamped in the back stuff, in the back trail, and we lose sight of the creative part that got us there. Because we think we're drowning in this other stuff. But if we recognize that the two come together, then it allows you to sort of ride over the backlog and stay with the creative part so that you can carry it forward. Anyway, it's really interesting.
That's the part of writing that I do have a process for. I feel like I got derailed so many times by creative processes in the bigger sense, not just on the page, that now I it has a rhythm that I feel almost like a pulse, you know. I know to lay low. Bon Iver's album, the most recent one, 22 a Million, you know, so many of the different themes on that remind me of this creative process. And he's talking about a divine, Kabbalistic seeming, alchemical type creative process. And you know, he talks about, I stayed down last night. I don't know, just the various rhythms on that album actually make me think of that Order Disorder Paradox book too. That was a book I put on Jeffrey's list. Every once in a while I have a winning, you know, suggestion. Something that I was thinking of, Marco, I love these three quotes at the beginning. I don't know if they're, I can't imagine the speaker beginning with them in succession. So I almost feel like maybe there's another thing you could do with them. And I mean, I love all three of them, and yet they each have a slightly different flavor. So We Traffic in Glass is brilliant. We create screens to cancel out other screens made me think of the cultural theorist Paul Virilio, who talks about how kids, newer generations, they're no longer a screen that throws, or no, they are now screens that throw back messages. There's no feedback loop anymore. And then We Are in the Business of World Transformation. You know, whatever. That's kind of slogany in that fun way, I think, that you're going for. I had a vision come into my mind of a mock website, like these mastermind marketing websites where you have the testimonials of these highly regarded people. I don't think that's the right expression for it, but I love those three things. And another thing that came to mind with it is Harrison Bergeron. Do you know the Vonnegut story?
No.
It's online. I can find it. but he has these, it's a futuristic story. It's like a Borges kind of vision, only in Vonnegut style. And he has Harrison Bergeron has all these special gifts. He's special, and the future doesn't like that. So they put these weights on him that essentially slow down all of his capacities. I'll see if I can find it. It just kind of, something about the qualities brought that out.
Okay. What is the darkness in this? I mean, there's something hiding, you know. I think when you're wearing glasses, you are wearing you still are putting a screen on. You still are creating this distinction between self and world, between what's behind the glasses, what's in front of the glasses. You're framing things in a certain way. Like, you're imposing a appearance like on your own, yourself. I think also like any, like the commercial aspect itself, like makes me nervous, because you know, things are exciting at first, but then they become a job, you know, then they become just work to do. And so, I'm wary of, starting something else, like starting something new that, you know, when I already have so much that's unfinished, that, and when, like the things that are attractive to me about this visionary kind of quality, and like the, like my daughters, for example, who I think inspired this, and like, I don't know if I would have just bought those glasses if it weren't for them. And if it weren't for the playfulness that they bring out in me, you know, and that they're always playing, like they have no problem with creativity, none. Like they just are always creating, they're always drawing, they're always pretending, etc. And so I mean one of the tensions like in that I'm holding is between doing this creative stuff and doing, you know, Cosmos and, you know, having this performance, because it's a, there's a performative aspect to all that. And then on the other hand, having just a quiet, just humble, simple life, you know, where I get to enjoy my family and, you know, do things that are not poetic necessarily, or that are poetic in a much, much different way, or, you know, in a way that doesn't need to be trumpeted or you know, made into a website or anything like that. Like I really feel those tensions like deeply in my being, and like they're like tectonic forces that I think are generative, like they're actually creative, but they're not pleasant to create through. Like I'm sure Doug, you may be able to, you know, to relate as a bearded man, with
as a shirt, father, maybe. Like... But yeah, I'll jump in with a whole jumbled mess of everything. But I'm seeing this as a storytelling or an oral tradition is what you would rather have this be. The, as Mary mentioned at the very first few moments, she said the writing, the rough draft process, it's thrown out there. It's not necessarily anything that, oh, I've got to correct this word, I've got to do this. But you've got the ideas, you're rolling with it. Even as we speak right now, you're working on your project. And if I may introduce myself to this group, since I didn't get a chance, I was distant. Doing political things, which I never do in my life. This is my first political or foray into the political realm, but here I am. But I see the reason I'm not a writer is because it has to be maybe what Heather experiences as poetics. Poetics is life, as maybe chess is life for some people, or whatever is life. So for me to sit down and write a story, you mentioned, Marco, that it's not possible for you to write a book because that's just not how you were trained, or it's not how your brain works. And that's, yeah, even writing for me, it works in those brief moments I have, but to even once I reflect upon the writing past a few sentences here and there, then it becomes not what I want it to be. But the oral tradition, the storytelling, that spark of an idea that you've got. So if we're going back to the glasses now, that came from you were in time with Jeffrey and Heather, or in time with your family over that weekend. You happened upon these glasses, and the culmination of everything that was going on formed into this spark of an idea. which is completely chaotic or ignorant or genius. It might be the divinization of matter that you're hoping will occur. It'll be seen in the sunglasses, but it's a metaphor for everything else that you have going on. And what you want is to step away from, like you're doing right now. You're sitting inside a little pod, hanging out with some faces on a screen, but you would rather be in person. And the glasses would bring that. You're able to trek about the mountain, and if you come across somebody else with glasses on, then you would be right there with them, and the conversation would be sparked. And so I guess I don't know where to go with this, but I'm seeing it as an oral tradition. You want, or maybe I want, and I'm projecting my own desires. I want writing to become oral, to become a tradition where in this time we're spending right now, where the 2 hours that we're having this conversation, that this is an oral tradition here. We're not writing. We would all say, well, I would rather be going and writing and working on this project. But in reality, we're right here and we're enjoying ourselves tremendously, I hope. And not writing. There might be somebody in the background typing something or browsing. But so I'm seeing the oral tradition as my writing, and I see your project as a vision into the oral tradition to reconnect with that. Maybe.
Yeah, you know, I really just want the piece, this piece for the journal, just to like spark something. Like I want to send it off, publish it, be done with it, and then like I'll keep wearing the glasses. Like I'll keep going out for walks, and then things, every time something always happens, and then I'll just keep writing, and things will, like, it will, the stories will come through the interactions that occur in this practice. And you know, you don't need to wear the glasses to hold two questions in your mind at the same time, you know, but they're fun. and that, you know, like they provide a focal point for that story, that oral moment, you know, when people talk to each other. And I mean, that's what came together for me that day when I went out, is like, I got into conversations with people, and they told me stories, and I learned about their lives. And it was really like, almost the glasses almost provided like a layer of protection for me too, where I don't know, I could be more, just free to be anyone. Like I didn't have to be the person I thought I was, or that, you know, some guy who lives in Longmont and is out for a walk. Like I could be this crazy guy wearing glasses and talking about whatever crazy plans I was concocting in my mind, and people are like, oh yeah, whatever, this is just some weird guy. And that, then they opened up, they actually, like, you know, like we had a human encounter, like I heard about people's wives, you know, who are dying, about being in jail, about hanging out with people they called the Pirates. Like there's a gang in Boulder called the Pirates. I had no idea. And then more, like I wrote some of these notes down, and I don't know if those can make it into this story directly, because I don't even know what they, like I haven't processed them yet. But that's would be the kind of thing that I hope would happen, and I think will, actually. Like, but the confidence piece is important, and you know, like one doesn't want to be, or I don't want to be just sort of dismissed, you know, as just some fool or just somebody with a silly idea, you know, like there's. Not that I don't mind if that's what somebody thinks, and I probably think that at some level, but like there, to me, it's actually like addressing, it's also addressing like a root issue, you know? And part of what was coming through for me was when I was out walking and imagining, like, you know, this whole scenario in my mind, this is like, I'm remembering people who committed suicide. I'm remembering people, you know, who really kind of were destroyed by the lack of being able to connect with other people. And, you know, that was moving to me. That, so I saw the potential, you know, and I really saw the potential, like, man, like that, of course, I don't know. It's not like solving the world's problems, but it is actually, you know, it is. And so that's kind of what, there's one, this is more oral story, but it's totally derailed, but like, it's just so specific is what I mean. And that's like, that's what you can do in poetry as well, is you can be very specific without, you know, sort of falling into cliche. I mean, that's, but it's always a play between the two. And that's part of the paradox and the tension that I'm holding. And you guys are really forcing me to, I don't know, work through this. And I'm feeling rather vulnerable and exposed right now. Maybe I should put on my glasses.
I've been wondering whether I should tell you that I never wear glasses. I can't wear them.
That's okay, because
I'm prescribed for them, but I can't wear them.
Glasses are just the beginning. They're just the beginning. There could be all kinds of exciting. There could be earpieces, nose rings.
I heard a potential dark side to your story, and I think it's potentially a surprising dark side, which is that moment where I felt you expressing being touched at thinking of the people who had committed suicide and how all of these stories were sort of swirling. I feel like that's the narrative. That's the fabric of it. And when you describe the, you know, they didn't have that connection and yet the glasses enabled you to have it, and you wanted that through the glasses, like whatever this could become, it sounded like that's sort of the root yearning. I almost feel like that's the dark side of the story. It's that tension between the glimpse that is so pure and kind of an innocent desire, is almost how it feels like to heal something, which I feel like I can identify with, and yet the realism that kicks in with all of this, how would this even happen? And, you know, and then even the fact that somebody who can't connect with others probably won't be able to with the glasses either. I don't want to dampen the optimism, but I'm just wondering if that yearning itself, the essence of that, is part of the dark side of the story. Like a narrator that may not succeed, but is still writing things down.
If I might just add something to that, I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm going to get emotional. Just before I went out to Boulder, I have a close friend who knows or is close to a girl. A young girl who was 10 years old who committed suicide. So this issue of suicide is something that's kind of alive in me right now. It's something that I'm still dealing with, even though I didn't know the young person. My friend is important to me, and so I have this connection through her to this situation. And then when we were out there and I spent that evening with you, Marco, and your two girls. So, and part of that, the magic of that evening is that sensitivity towards the young people and young children and their marvelousness and their marvels. But of course, that story crosses the other one. in ways that bring up the sensitivity. So I think I'm just speaking out of my own personal experience, but I do feel that what Heather was just talking about, that these two things cross each other in that way.
Yeah.
This is just I don't quite know what it is, but something that struck me in your own experience of it, you were the one who had the glasses and you met people who didn't have glasses on. But it sounds to me as if you envision it as people with glasses meeting other people with glasses, which is potentially something different. Like already what you describe, a person with the glasses meeting people who don't have glasses, is one thing that is very powerful and is bringing out all these very powerful stories. And so, but the two people with glasses, that's unknown and potentially something quite surprising, something that we haven't thought of or imagined yet happens in that. Is that right? I feel like maybe I don't know all the background details of how it worked, but that struck me as we were talking.
Well, for me, it was just transformative, I guess, walking around in this. Mm-hmm. So even if nobody else knew like what was going on in my mind, like my fantasy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that with two people met each other. And this is assuming like it's like totally, you know, like underground, like it would be like improbable, right?
Yeah.
To meet so that's almost more of a mechanism, right? That's like a signaling mechanism. Like it's like gangs, you know, who have maybe the same tattoo or something, like you'd like recognize somebody
like it's the pirates, I guess.
Yeah. but there are two different domains of possibility. That's true. Yes. And I think for me too, it's partly about me, right? And about my feeling of freedom to be who I am in the world. Right, to walk around town, talk to anyone I please and who wants to talk to me, and to like that sort of, I went for a walk with my daughter just around the block because she was kind of getting cabin, you know, going a little bit crazy and running up, you know, up and down the house and just screaming and stuff. But I just imagined myself with a little flute. I can't play the flute, but I would like to play the flute and walk around town. And it's just like, you know, just like Pete the Pied Piper or something. That's a dark story too. but I like that. Like I think that that's part of the human ecology too. Like I want to play that role. I want to make people happy. And that's it.
That's one of my favorite stories, the Pied Piper. I love the dark side of that.
Yeah, so this is helpful, I'll just say. I don't want to hog all the focus and maybe I'm trying to deflect the focus also. I'll see what I come up with. I'm going to come up with something. I've been writing every morning, and a little bit's coming out every morning. And so
I wanted to get a bit of feedback about the framing, about whether or not the framing is appropriate or whether it needs to be redone.
I also wanted to get some thoughts on how the pieces fit together. So do we need to... So the framing, I think, that raises that question. Do the pieces fit together? Because you mentioned my piece as scholarly in there.
Well, that's what I had, what I thought you were going to do, and you did something very different, so I'm going to have to change it.
Just curious, because we could go different ways with this. I think looking at the puzzle of it might be useful for a little bit, if we can, too.
Yeah.
I was curious about the order of the framing. You had the discursive piece at the end, and yet it sounded in at least one place as though it were not the end. I didn't know if that was a change that you made. You say within this text, one will find many different examples, and yet it comes at the end of the document. I guess that works either way, but.
Yeah. Originally I had thought it would be three pieces and then the bridging piece at the end. But then when I wrote that poem about the quantum things, I thought, well, that was nicely placed at the beginning. So I stuck it in the beginning. Then I thought it needed some explanation, so I put in an extra text there. But I left the other stuff down at the end. So, but I'm not, you know, I don't know whether, if, I'm not sure, I'm not really not sure whether or not it's the right thing to do at all.
I wonder about that list of, what was it, 9 features that you had in your presentation. Could that go after the poem at the beginning?
Yeah, so I was thinking about that. I needed maybe more information.
That list was so succinct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then your description.
But doesn't it need some sort of explanation about the pieces? I mean, even if I put the list in, then it needs some sort of explanation about what the list is about. So,
yeah.
I could certainly do that. I think in terms of number of words, we're okay too. I can't remember what the exact number of words are.
3,000 to 8,000 is what's allowed. So mine came in around, it'll be under, probably around 1,300 now.
Yeah.
If I leave it as it is.
And mine's about 3,000. So we've still got lots of room for Marco there.
How many words, more or less?
Well, you've got at least 3,000 words you can play with there.
Okay. I like the excitation states.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the conference, you went first, Jeffrey, and it was like boy, girl, boy.
That never occurred to me.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that was, you know, aesthetic. That was symmetric. Like there was symmetry in there.
I thought we had 8 genders, so are we sure?
I know, but still. Still. It's
surface. Both Heather and I identify as being somewhat ambiguous about the gender, don't we?
So I know.
Well, yeah. I identify somewhat hermaphroditically, energetically.
I know.
Because the way I did. I
so
wrote
maybe
that,
you should go in the middle, Marco.
I wrote that originally before we did the presentation and before, because I thought of, I don't know why I thought of it this way. I think I thought Heather would set up this was in my ideas. She would frame the because she's so good at that. So, you would frame the, and your piece does do that. It does set up a kind of a way of thinking about things. And then my piece comes in the middle, and then Marco opens us up towards the end. That's the way I sort of saw it. But
I'm just laughing because on Monday night, I was just bemoaning the fact that I have no idea how to frame anything on a different call for facilitation. So it's just, it's a confusing life. But do you think, so you were saying the piece as it is does have a kind of frame built in. Should I scrap it and do something different? Does it fit within the
project? I loved it. I loved that. I don't want you to change a thing in there.
Well, I was very sensitive, to Mark. I wrote a little bit about what Marco had suggested, and I don't know how to, that created a tension in me that made me feel very sensitive.
hold on. Two different things. Framing, quantum flower, and then the petals, and then you have a poem, Jeffrey, which like invokes the flower, basically, right? And then is the idea that it goes then to Heather and then back to the bodies and then to the...
I didn't think of it in terms of the content. I thought of it in terms of the who's.
Who's?
Yeah, like the Horton Hears Who. No. Oh.
That's exactly what I heard.
Heather as a who for the first piece, Jeffrey as a who for the second piece, and Mark. Regardless of what was written, because of course I sort of set out that structure before we'd written anything. And right. Then when I wrote my piece, I wrote it with in mind that it would be number two.
Okay, but I may not just be getting the sequence correct, because there's excitation state two, and that's the nine meditations on the body. But there's a prior poem.
Yeah, but that's part of the framing. So this is what I
think. So that's the framing.
Yeah.
So then, would it be that followed by excitation state one, which is Heather's piece, followed by excitation state two, which is the bodies, your piece.
Yeah.
Followed by excitation state three.
Which would be your piece.
Correct.
And then it might have a little piece at the end.
Okay.
Depending on what we decide to do.
Okay. Yeah. And that's the one, but that's not written.
Well, that's the piece there. I've got a little bit in there, but I didn't know whether or not it's good or not. Maybe wrong.
Okay.
It maybe need to be more, less pedantic. It's a bit pedantic, that piece, in my opinion.
Okay.
I marked it up with that in mind. So that last piece on the last page, you mean?
Yeah.
There were just a few moments where that stood out to me. Like, we're not interested in metamutation. And I didn't know. Those were moments where I felt like you were maybe searching for the thing to say, and you didn't maybe have to say it at all.
Mm.
And maybe I'm wrong about that, but.
And perhaps I shouldn't be writing that piece. Maybe somebody else should be writing it.
Oh, I'm not able to write that piece, I don't think. I like what you did with it. There were just a few moments that I, because it was very synthesizing, maybe even in ways that went beyond what we've actually synthesized, like connecting Clarice Lispector after Marco, I think it was.
Yeah.
So that crossed the grains of our three presentations. Then you referenced the presentations, which I thought was interesting, but we can't really do that unless we say more about them, right?
Yeah, maybe not. And I sort of adventured to say things about your pieces as if I was the general voice, right?
The transparent voice.
but I'm happy if you guys want to get in and tinker with the text, you know? I mean, I tend to write that way on a joint piece where I just write something in and then hope that people jump in and start tinkering with the text, you know?
So the other place where I saw that kind of, like you were searching, but didn't need to necessarily say it, was the line, although some will appear to be about quantum field poetics, form and content are never really clearly separated here, perhaps another characteristic of QFP. It's just that perhaps another characteristic of QFP. It's like you have a really elaborated theory, and it's almost like you're letting us shape with you. And I don't know that you need to do that.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just a thought I was having.
Okay.
Never mind me.
So let's come back to the ending. I haven't even looked at it, actually. I didn't notice that it was on the back of the page. But I wanted to say about Heather's piece that I think, like, I read it aloud. I read it first earlier, and then I read it again, and I agree with Jeffrey, it really works. And I think I've read previous versions of this where it felt a little looser, like it didn't feel like the threads were as intimately woven. And I felt now, this time reading through, that even though there are discontinuities and there are shifts in context or perspective or voice, and even form, like on the page, that I felt the continuity moving through it. I could feel the this is not the right word, and you play with this, but the completeness of it. That's not the right word.
It's in relationship with its final presentation medium and format. And so completion might be the right word. If the puzzle piece fits into the right place for what it was written for, which I didn't know what it would be written for.
The other thing I think when I was reading it, I thought if this was a piece that stood on its own, it might need a little extra something in order to make it cohere a little bit more strongly together. But because it's part of a larger piece, it works without the extra piece because it's framed by the other stuff and it coheres anyway. So that was an observation about it. But so I didn't feel like it needed anything else. But
does the day, I added the day and night and the Gebser quote, which I don't know if that renders the two quotes after it to be something now I need to take out. The Ann Carson and the...
No, I think it was great. The one I miss is the Lispector quote that you had on the presentation. But
we could add that one into the project somewhere as an interlude in between the excitations, since you referenced Lispector at the end.
Yes, maybe we could do that. Or maybe we could put in two interludes between Heather's text and my text, and my text and Marco's.
Those could be theoretical, or what's a quantum word for interlude? Maybe that will inspire us to think of
it. Yeah, hang on. It would be, it could be metastable, or it could be...
Metastable would be nice to have. Maybe.
There's also your quantum flower.
And I have a quote for that. Can I share this quote? I'm so excited. I don't know if it'll work perfectly, but can I share it anyway?
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's also Stuart Davis's Flower of a Zero, which we might want to remember and potentially quote. But so this is from Transdisciplinary Scholarship. Bezarab Nicolescu says, I'm just going to read the whole thing up. I'll tell you when the quote starts. This poet, Nicolescu says, is the permeable barrier of the void, the bottom of which is silence of all the potentialities of the physical universe. This silence contains, here's the quote, all the words, all the books, past and future, as the quantum void contains all future galaxies, even the flower of the silence, the flower of the void that is the human being himself. The information buried in the void is living information. The engendering of forms takes place through order and not through chaos, through negentropy and not through entropy. From the entropy of words is born the negentropy of the living poem, for silence is the orchid of the soul.
Lovely.
Interesting that I got an orchid at the conference.
So that would be a nice piece to lead from your from my piece to Marco's.
Beautiful,
and
yeah.
The Lispector would be a nice way to lead from yours into mine, perhaps.
The way the egoic self makes meaning unfolds in stages. Each new stage infolds and holds all previous stages like the outer petals of a blooming flower.
Yeah, would be good.
Anyway, those are two quotes I had. I'll post it in the forum, so you can decide.
The quantum flower was a suggestion. It's not fixed in stone either. It's just that it is in a volume called Mutations. So I got this idea that a flower as a kind of, a quantum flower is a kind of mutation. You know, it's what struck me.
I love it.
It was based on, I think, something you said, Marco, about the petals, three petals, and then I developed a little drawing out of that. So
I love it, and I think that each petal is its own mutation. That's what's so interesting.
Exactly.
And they're held together by the flower structure. And I'm glad that I've gotten a chance to, that we've had this chance to talk, that I've gotten a chance to read Heather's piece and your piece, or reread them, and even talk about this framing. it feels like it gives me maybe narrows in a good way, like the whole field of possibilities, because I really haven't, you have pieces already done, basically. Your pieces are good. I noticed some typos and things like that, but there's not that much more to do other than the framing things and the interstitial fragments, right. Quotes. But I'm still forming my pedal. And I have a sense better. I have a better sense of really sort of the dimensionality to give it to, you know, I'm not writing so much with you directly in mind, but to complement and to work as this very interesting mix, I think it will be. I like how it's coming together, is I guess what I want to say.
I do too. I'm going to work on the interstitial pieces based on some of the things Heather said. It's a good thing we're recording this, because I'll be able to go back over the recording too. Mm.
The first half of the call had some real gems in it too.
And Flower of Zero, that song by Stuart Davis, I had, you're at one time wanted to name a magazine Flower Zero, inspired by that song, and I told that to him, and that was almost like the proto, you know, one of the three or four earlier incarnations of metapsychosis was probably Flower Zero.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Jeffrey, you'll have to listen to that song now.
I will.
And then I'll send the Clarice Lispector quote along too.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. I'll put it in somewhere.
So there's about 20 minutes left. I wonder if we could talk about next steps and what we might do next. I'm very eager to invite Mary to share something and to, you know, look at your work and talk with, you know, about it and with you, if you want to come back. And there's also, you know, we could, I mean, just in the way that Jeffrey, Heather, and I have had this project, and, you know, Doug has been working with John and Michael and now Katina on dream work, and you know, we can reconfigure in different ways, and there could be, you know, I don't know, it's really what you want to do, like, you know, what do you want to bring to this, and you don't it doesn't have to be anything in particular, and it could be something that comes later or when you feel comfortable, but you know, I think that you probably have something quite interesting to bring, so I'm curious what that is.
Thanks. It is already just super interesting to talk about all these ideas and listen to you guys. And I would love to, I guess I heard that sometimes Jeffrey would share excerpts from his prose work. So that's something I could definitely do. And I think that would be really helpful. To me, it's always helpful to have people read things and be able to discuss it. But I'd also like to do things that fit in well with what the group's doing and your projects too. Because I think there's a neat, you know, things are building on other things that you guys are doing. So.
But if you had a piece that was like, if you had a piece of writing that was ready to be shared, I mean, basically we work off where people are at with their work, and sometimes they're ready to share it and sometimes they're not, you know, so sometimes we've had sessions where we just had no idea what we were going to do. And then half a day before the thing, somebody posts something and we end up talking about it. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, so.
So would the ideal be that maybe, you know, 1 week before the actual meeting took place, or within a decent interval of the meeting taking place, just see what is.
Yeah, well, you can post on, because then the writers, if you post under the thread, the Writers Underground, only the writers group sees it. It doesn't go out to the general public. So it allows you to share writing that you don't really want to share with the general public.
Yeah,
at this point,
it shouldn't be
feedback on
free on the loose on the internet. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great.
We also have a Google folder that, I don't know, I use it, Doug does. I don't know if the others do, but if there's like a, well, you can upload documents to like PDF or Word doc.
Okay.
And if there's like something bigger, it could go there.
My novel was, my novel Plenum was, is loaded on there.
So. Mm, so I could share that with you. And we still have to work out file management issues, and but that's another conversation.
So yeah, there's just no sense of a theme for the next meeting. It's sort of going to unfold. Is that the sense?
Well, could, I mean, if you would like a theme, then we could develop one. One of the early theme of this group, which was introduced by Jeffrey, was revelations. Mm-hmm. And one thought I've had is that since we're going on almost a year, that we could gather some of our writings that have, you know, are not slated for a publication elsewhere, and put together a volume, put together, you know, a print edition, that is to say. And that wouldn't be so hard to do. Just have some artwork, and it'd be one of the things that Metapsychosis could do as a journal, is publish maybe a yearly kind of edition. And I have, you know, there's more material on the website that could be published maybe for earlier years if we wanted to go retroactive. And I think I'd like to do that. It's just a matter of the time and, you know, energy it takes to do. It's not so expensive to do, but, you know, like, because there's print on demand, and so you don't have to order 1,000 books, you know. However, there are possibilities which Heather has brought up around more of the book crafting, and that would be more, that would cost money, because we'd have to have it run printed, and then that, and probably spend quite a bit more time on things like book, you know, this paper and typography and so forth. We'll do typography in either case, but I want to just put that forward as one of the possibilities. It's something I'd like the underground to come over, you know, to sprout into this, into the light of day, and for this to be a generative space where, like, what we're sharing here is not necessarily, doesn't have to be published. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be even completed. Like, part of what's good about this is that we can share work that's in progress and that's in potential, it's in a potential state. But ultimately, I feel most satisfied when my work can also be public, like shared with the world. And so I think we have enough quality and talent here to do that. And I think, you know, combining our respective skills and backgrounds, we could probably put together some good work. And that would be very, very satisfying, I think, to do. So maybe we should return to that conversation later, or, you know, you can give feedback on it. But part of what I'm trying to say is that as we develop our work, we could begin to collect it into these bouquets of, and so to think about that, and, you know, there are editors for the journal, but it's really just a community. And part of what I would like to do, and what I've been trying and failing to do, has been to more distribute like that function. I should mention that there are a couple of other, there are other editors who are not so much participating in the writing group, but can see the posts. And they're the ones who've been more long-term, like Ed, Mahood, Bridget Burke, and Wendy Ronitz-Baker, who still meet with me every couple of weeks to talk about stuff that we publish on the journal, like on the website. Mm-hmm. And I would, like, in my dream, I imagine that, you know, however long it takes, there'd be more of a sort of, not a huge, like, community, but more people, like, so that there'd probably be multiple groups and there'd be overlaps and cross, but that would sort of form this substrate or this the soil that like where we're growing our own writing, you know, we're growing our own. And yeah, that's sort of my, that's how, where I would like it to go, but that's only one part of it. So the one thing about the glass, like the core inquiry with the glasses is what would we like to have happen? What do we want to have happen? That's like one lens. And the other is what wants to happen? Or what do I want to have happen? And what wants to happen? What do you want? So, but there could be a lot of other like inquiries. And I think that that's like what I'm working with is there's lots of things that I would love to do that I'm excited about. And then everyone brings those personal wishes, I think, and desires. And then when those come together, then what actually wants to happen from that intersect, you know, from that space. And so, but really like the core thing is just sharing work and talking about it and sharing time together. And so if that's all that happened, I think that would be worth it. That'd be something of value in itself.
Super. And to say a word about the revelations, I mean, it was really picking up the field of what was being discussed. So for instance, Zachary was writing about early experiences at that time. He's since gone, he's moved, he's kind of a autobiography book or a memoir kind of book. But it was talking about some very difficult things that he experienced as a young boy. And so it was a kind of revelation of things that had happened. Johnny was writing about his experiences as a gay man in New York in a novel format. And that was also a kind of a revelation. So in each of the different text that we were looking at, there was a kind of an unveiling of something that had been underground before and that was being brought to the surface. And so revelation seemed to, and then in addition, within the Infinite Conversations site, we're of course partly focused on, as you know, Mary, spiritual questions or questions that have a spiritual resonance to them. And so revelation seemed to be a doubly appropriate etiquette label for what was going on in terms of the group. And so it wasn't just my own ideas, it was kind of a reading of the group, and it mm-hmm. it resonated with everybody. So
mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it was apropos. Yeah.
That's really interesting. The project sounds fascinating. Okay.
Good. Okay. So So you're invited to if next month we could read something that you've shared. You don't have to, but you're invited.
Okay. Sounds amazing. That's on the 28th of November. Right?
I believe so. Let's look at the calendar.
It would be good because I'm away till the 21st. I'm going away again.
You're never. I mean, you have an apartment, Jeffrey. I know you have a home.
See, I do see. Yeah, the 28th is the next meeting. And maybe, you know, there might be somebody else who has something to share, and we could do both. Let's see what comes up. The result, I know that Donna was interested, but this is not a good time for her, actually, in the evening. Donna, you met. Yeah. She's in Jordan, which would be the middle of the night. And she said she was in between jobs. She sounded like was maybe experiencing some financial stress. So I'm going to reach out to her. We were going to do a talk on an Iraqi poet, and she postponed it because of this job thing. But there's some other people around, I guess is what I'm saying. And, we do do the monthly meetings, but there's the possibility of doing other things, and it's kind of up to you, you know, to choose your adventure. And I'm
okay. So what would you recommend? Like that sometime in the next few weeks, I put up some writing. Like what? It's up to all of us, but I'm still feeling my way.
I'm interested in your dog project. Sounds pretty basic, but it's much more than that. I recently watched a movie by Wes Anderson, Isle of Dogs.
I saw that too.
It's very. I figured that'd be good fodder for your project, but just the idea really interests me. So whatever you happen to post will be read, usually read better by others than myself, but I have this urge to read. And if you get the urge to post, I would like to hear something from that. I know you have what you have on your website, so if there's something that maybe we could get a feel of who you are, what you are about, you could post maybe one of your particular essays or works that you've done before.
Sure. Okay, great.
Just whatever comes up, and if no writing comes up, we tend to talk about whatever. We talk about poetry the first 30 minutes.
You're not going to run out of things to talk about.
No, we don't tend to run out of things to talk about. It's always fun because there are issues as writers, and so we don't actually have a formal list of issues, but I think we kind of have in our own heads has items on that list that are challenges as a writer to deal with. And so when we have free time, those are the issues that rise to the top of the heap kind of thing. Yeah. And they're interesting to talk about. You and I, you know that, Mary, when we get together and we have a ton of things to talk about as writers, right? So.
Always, wonderful.
I think Picasso said something like about critics and painters. I think this kind of applies because, like, when critics, maybe it wasn't critics or something, maybe it was art dealers or something like that. When they get together, they talk about, you know, what this painter, that painter, or colors or something. When artists get together, they talk about turpentine. But I think that's, you know, like that's kind of it. Like there's just material issues that you deal with, and material even just in this spiritual sense of the material, like your body issues of trying to make words fit together on a page in a meaningful way, living in, you know, living your life, being in your body, dealing with your emotions, dealing with, you know, your ego, all of these things are, I think, I mean, actually the stuff of writing, like a lot of it is just even getting to the point where you can write, like even to the point where you're out of the way enough that whatever you have to say or whatever story is being conceived in you can come through. I have found, I appreciate just the opportunity to talk, even if we don't know what we're talking about, because I don't have a lot of other chances or, you know, contexts in which I can talk about the issues that are most dear to me as a writer, like that I actually struggle with and that are difficult. Just talking about them a little bit and getting them off my chest has been helpful to me, and being received and reflected and, you know, held with some compassion, or at least, I find that that's very helpful. And I guess it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning about the fellowship aspect. Heather introduced me to that term, and I don't want to appropriate it in any way. I think, you know, but I think it's you know, how many writers have ended their own lives because of just the stresses of what it takes to bring forth their work or to live their lives, to be in their bodies, to be in their lives. But with the fellowship, I think it allows, you know, to feel like more like you're not alone. And I don't know if that's you know, we all perhaps struggle to that to different degrees or in different ways. But I appreciate the space for that. And so it's part of why I want to like protect it and at the same time open it to those who need it. I don't know what I'm saying anymore, but just to, I guess, bring it home, bring it to why this matters. Like why be here? I'll shut up.
When I was at Naropa, one of the things they encouraged us to do as serious artists was to start an art collective. And I was very frustrated. There weren't any that I could imagine working, but I somehow wound up in one. That's kind of what I feel like this is an art collective, because, you know, we're putting on readings, we're creating things, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm not fighting it, and it matches my values. So I feel like I kind of got where I needed to be.
I had a lot of fun at the reading. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Like,
me too.
I want to do more of that kind of thing. So, it doesn't have to be in Montreal, Quebec City. it's been a couple hours. I'm tired. That was emotionally like intense. Like when you shared Jeffrey. So
yeah,
I think I have to get up tomorrow. I want to get up tomorrow and work on Cosmovision. This is tied to a whole other project too, by the way, which is like for this sort of catalog called Cosmovision 2020, which would be like this directory of weird and wonderful things.
We had a long conversation about it walking around Longmont the other day, Marco and I. Kind of whole earth catalog for those who might have those memories, but yeah, for infinite conversations.
So I guess just last steps on the submission. I'm going to keep posting whatever iterations I have over the next few days. And how are we handling submitting this to Jeremy? Who's going to collate everything and put together the final draft?
Good question.
Well, I think we should probably proof the final draft, all three of us. So maybe Jeffrey, if you're working on the interstitial pieces or the vision for it,
you have a
vision. Yeah.
I'll stitch it together.
Okay.
And then send it out to both of you. But do we have dates for that? I mean, can we get, a few days extension or do we just aim for the 31st and live with
it? So it sounds like Marco knows more about that than I do. Because you talked to Jeremy about it?
The sense I got from Jeremy is that he's overwhelmed with stuff and I don't think they're going to be done and ready by the 31st. If we needed an extension, we'd probably take one, but I don't want to ask for one at this point. I don't really either
because we got a pretty generous one. Mm. Mm.
Yeah. And I'd like to finish something. And I think I can in the next week. I think I have enough to go on. And after this call,
let me have a look at the dates then.
But what I would just suggest is that we put it in a Google Doc, that way we can sort of have a copy that we all update.
And yeah, that's a good idea.
The 31st is next Wednesday. So if we tried to stitch it together by Sunday night.
Okay.
If all the pieces came in for Sunday, is that too early?
I've posted the pieces that I owe you, I think.
The quotations, I just saw something come in. Yeah, yeah. It's Marco, your piece
is going to be me.
The slow piece. So you're the deciding factor on that. But at least I can put the rest of it together.
It wouldn't be bad for me to have something by Sunday or Monday at the latest, because usually Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are very busy for me. So
Yeah. Well, 31st is the Wednesday. So in principle, we would, is it the 31st we said with Jeremy? So
if you could just, whatever, wherever you put the Google Doc, if you could share the link in our shared space or share it directly to my email that you have, Jeffrey, I would appreciate that. So I know where it is. Yeah. Thank you.
It's hard to find stuff on the Infinite Conversations site sometimes, Marco. You know that.
I do. Very well. It's on my list. The search does work pretty well, but we have to.
I've had trouble with the search.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah.
It depends on, it has something to do with the way the sections or threads or whatever, not the threads, but the there are sort of categories and it searches within the category. It doesn't seem to search all the way across the site.
Oh, okay.
It seems to search inside its little category. And it, so it depends where you are when you do the search, what it looks at.
There's an advanced search, which I'll look into that. Will allow you to.
So sometimes I'm sitting in this place and I'm doing a search and it gets me nothing, nada. And then I figure out that I'm in the wrong place asking to do the search and then I have to figure out where to change to. And it's not always easy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you all. I need to hop off here.
Yeah, me too.
Good.
Nice to meet you, Mary. Thanks for joining us.
It was great to meet all of you. I can't wait for the next one.
So. Yeah.
Me too.
By the next one, we should have a text.
Yeah. That'll be a milestone. That'll be sort of the first flower. First flowering. Okay. And I think there are too many more. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.